Just as we ourselves do not want suffering nor the causes of suffering, likewise all sentient beings are equal in not wanting suffering nor the causes of suffering. It would be wonderful if myself and all living beings were free of suffering and the causes of suffering. This is compassion. May myself and all living beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. This is inspiring compassion, or the prayer of compassion. An exceptional resolve expressed as I myself will free myself and all living beings from suffering and the causes of suffering. This is the exceptional resolve of compassion. making requests to the Buddhas that may I be empowered by your blessing to be able to free myself and all living beings from suffering and the causes of their suffering. In order to actualize this aspiration to free all sentient beings from their suffering and the causes of suffering, I am, as my motivation for this, going to listen to the universal vehicle training on mind transformation in order to be of vast benefit to all living beings. So as I previously explained, the way we were going to conduct the teachings was that once a month we were going to have a session totally devoted to questions and answers, and today being the last session of the month, and this would have been that session. But since we've only had two teachings thus far this year, I thought we would divide it half and half, half teaching and then half devoted to questions and answers.
I'm 진행이다. 아니 말하자면 다 뒤질래. 딱 돌돌아 때는 돌았거나 딱 하고 그러는데 제가 드네다 아니 뒤질래 말하자면 바로 아니 뒤 콘서트에 바로 이래서 제대하는 거 바로 좌우 제대하는 거 아주 세면 제대하는 거 어떻게 되겠지 있다 얼음에 먹는 것들 세면에 있을 수 있는 이유만
Yes. So we're beginning tonight on verse 39, which reads as follows. When attachment and anger disturb and upset us, no matter how much we may try to suppress them, this is the wheel of sharp weapons returning full circle upon us from wrongs we have done. Till now we have held on to improper outlook, stubbornly cherishing only ourselves. Thereafter let's uproot self-interest completely. So, you know, if we consider this, we can readily understand what's being talked about here. The fact that from time to time we generate anger, we generate, develop attachment, jealousy, miserliness, that these, the going through these cycles of the arising of these various afflictive emotions within our mind. So, you know, we're continually generating a plethora of conceptions, lots of thoughts arising continually in our mind, which trouble our minds. These patterns of dysfunctional thought which are continually arising within our minds, that these negative attitudes, you know, from what are they arising? Under what influence? It is because we have been habituated to these negative ways of thinking, these dysfunctional thoughts, both in this life but also in previous lives, that they wash over us continually, like the waves on the ocean, continually coming one after another, almost without end. So the continual arising of these troublesome thoughts, these negative patterns within our mind, are simply arise out of the force of habituation to negative patterns, dysfunctional patterns of mind, both in this life but also over many previous lifetimes. And this is the wheel of sharp weapons returning back to ourselves. So these negative attitudes which are continually arising in our mind, they come about through the continual conception of I, this powerful conception of self which arises out of the ignorance of self-grasping. And depends upon this, there's a continuous emphasis upon this I, and leading to a self-importance of the I in terms of everything is thought of the I as central to all things, that we cherish the I, we forget about others, that we only want to concern ourselves with the happiness of this I and to free it from suffering. So there arises a self-centered attitude. Rinpoche is quoting from a verse by Dharmakirti, in which he traces the evolution of these various negative attitudes that we develop, and they arise out of the distinguishment between I and other. We have a very powerful sense of I as self, and it's extremely forceful, and out of this sense of this discrimination of I, there arises concomitantly sense of other. So in dependence upon the arising of the conception of I, arises the conception of other, or you. There is my side and the other side. So there is this powerful conceptions of both self and other, these attitudes. Out of these conceptions, these powerful attitudes or conceptions of self and other, in terms of self, we develop attachment, and we not only develop attachment to self, but also for I, but also to mine, my loved ones, my friends, my children, my possessions. On the one hand, and on the other, associated with the conception of other, we develop senses of aversion, of not liking, of jealousy, of hatred, anger. So all of these various negative attitudes of attachment and hatred arise out of discrimination of self and other. So it is out of this a conception of I which is arises in relationship with ignorance, misconceiving the nature of the I, that other comes about, and in dependence upon these two conceptions, that the associated emotions of attachment and aversion, and in dependence upon these, a proliferation of other afflictive emotions which arise in dependence upon these two basic afflictive emotions of aversion and attachment. And in dependence upon the arising of these afflictive emotions, then we engage in various types of actions. We accumulate karma and all the various negative qualities of both in terms of attitudes and action arise in this way. So how do we bring an end to all of these proliferations of afflictive emotions based upon the basic afflictive emotions of attachment and aversion? That these arise when from making a distinguishment between oneself and others. That this constant clinging to the I, the importance of the I on the one hand, and discriminating against other, as if they are unimportant, simply leaving them on the side. So it is in these proliferations of afflictive emotions arise in making a distinguishment as to the importance of I and other, making one's I self-central and others unimportant. So if we begin to dissolve this discriminative quality in the sense that both myself and others are exactly the same, there's no difference in that in our both wanting happiness and not wanting to suffer completely equally. There's no distinguishment made from the point of view of happiness and suffering.
Sure, I didn't know. There are no more people.
So, continuing and discussing another aspect of the wheel of sharp reference, returning to ourselves in, from the point of view of our meditation, our practice, that though we seek to meditate, to cultivate various states, that the when we try to meditate, the object of our observation does not appear to the mind, or does not appear clearly. It does not arise. We're not able to ascertain it. We can't understand what it is we're meditating on. When we meditate on emptiness, nothing clear appears to our mind. We don't understand the object. There's no realization. So that's on one hand. We're not able to, the object doesn't appear to us clearly. We're not able to understand it. We're not able to ascertain it, to realize it. On the other hand, when we meditate such subjects as compassion or love or the awakening heart, you know, when we are trying to generate the attitude of mind of compassion, which is embodied and expressed in the thought, it would be wonderful if living beings were free of suffering, the causes of suffering. That when we try to meditate on that, that all, it's just something from our mouth, and we may recite those words, and this is not meditation. What the actual meditation on compassion is, that the entity of the mind is transformed into a compassionate mind. This is the cultivation of compassion. It's not simply a thought in the mind, but or a word from the mouth, but the entity of the mind itself is transformed into a state of compassion. This is what meditation on compassion is. But when we do it, we simply we mouth the words or simply think thoughts in our mind, these particular thoughts, and we're not able to actually generate our mind or transform our mind into the entity of compassion. So we have these obstacles. Why is that? So we're asking the question, why do I have these obstacles? What's the problem? It is because our minds are under the influence of various distorted views. That due to holding on to distorted views within our mind, these negative views, then we aren't able to gain realization. We aren't able to generate these states of mind. I'm not going to be able to do that. So what is the obstacle to our gaining realization, to generating these various states of mind? As was mentioned, there are various distorted views or dysfunctional views. That, for example, when we meditate on emptiness, you know, we say that phenomena do not inherently... We say that phenomena do not inherently exist. And we use the reason because they are dependent arising. But when we try to think this through, nothing appears to our mind. That there is no ascertainment to by our awareness of what we're actually, the object that we're trying to penetrate, that we're actually trying to get to. And this is due to these dysfunctional views that we have, that we now possess. You know, what we're really thinking, and which acts as an obstacle to gaining these realizations and generating these states of mind, in terms of this meditation on emptiness, is, are things really empty or not? I'm not really sure. Even if they were, could I, even though I'm meditating, do I really have the ability to gain the realization? I'm not sure if I can really understand it or not. And we, out of this sense of, is it really this way? Does emptiness really exist? Can I, even if it were to exist, can I understand it? I'm not sure if I have the ability to gain realization. These various dysfunctional views that we harbor act as an obstacle to the actual gaining of realization, to the ascertainment of the object that we're trying to penetrate. And so we have to gain some conviction that emptiness in fact exists. I can realize emptiness, overcoming these dysfunctional views that we harbor, which act as an obstacle to gaining realization. And the same holds true for these other positive states of mind when we seek to generate them, such as compassion, love, the awakening heart. These are really important states to generate within our mind. But we, due to our dysfunctional views, we have a sense that, can these in fact be generated? Can I develop them? I really don't think I can. And therefore, due to the force of these dysfunctional views, our meditation has no power, has no force. The same holds, that we were just mentioning with respect to emptiness. that we wonder, well, does it exist? Maybe it does exist, but I'll never realize that. I can't. And therefore, we have no conviction, either in the existence of the object or our ability to develop an understanding of it or to actually generate it within our mind. Not having that conviction, then we make no great effort. And our meditation is not forceful. And therefore, it is these dysfunctional views which act as an obstacle to gaining these realizations. We have to rid ourselves of these dysfunctional views, to eliminate them. And we have to see that in fact emptiness exists. We have to see it, in fact, exists, and others have gained realization of it. Why can't I? Others have gained realization, have developed love and compassion. Why can't I? And gaining a real conviction that one too can gain these understandings and generate these states of mind. So an analogy would be in the case of simply one has a great goal in mind, some great work that one's thinking of undertaking, and one questions, well, you know, is this really worthwhile or not? I, you know, beginning to have doubts about whether it's worth all the trouble, whether it's the goal is worthy of all the effort that you're going to make. And then not only, but over and above that, think, well, you know, even if it is worthy, can I actually do it? I don't think I can handle it. I don't think I can achieve the goal. And so in such a state, one, nothing is achieved. And we're prevented from even directing ourselves toward the goal, but additionally, making great effort in trying to achieve it. So there are many types of dysfunctional views. An expanded number, we could list 36, or we could condense those down to 12, or we could even condense those down to 5.
Yes.
So these views are listed. These dysfunctional views are listed by Vasubandhu. Such views as the view of the transitory, the view of the permanence, the view of extremes, the view of holding wrong ethics as correct means. That these are all what it afflictive views on the one hand, but then there is another category of views which are correct views, authentic views, and these are in two, mundane and transmundane views. So these correct views or authentic views are of two types, mundane and transmundane. Yes. So the transmundane view is the direct realization of emptiness, and this is the most important, because it is able to, by means of this view, one can destroy all the afflictive emotions. But then there are the mundane views, or the mundane correct views. By mundane, it simply means ordinary. That is to say, the views which are not direct realization of emptiness. Those correct views which are not within the direct realization of emptiness are termed mundane, authentic or correct views. So for us ordinary individuals, these mundane views are extremely important. Our practice depends upon them. That is, for example, the view is as with respect to what is to be abandoned, what is to be cultivated, what is to be adopted or rejected. So the mundane correct view is subsumed within the view that with independence upon positive physical, verbal, and mental acts, all desirable results arise. Healthy types of results, positive types of results. on the one hand, and on the other, independence upon negative verbal, mental, physical, verbal, mental acts, all unwanted or undesirable results arise. This is the mundane correct view.